I went on a road trip through every English county and filmed something interesting in each of them. And my journey started with fire, molten metal, and taking a sledgehammer to a piece of history in the centre of the country, in Leicestershire. It was 7 a.m. when I parked up at the John Taylor Bell Foundry, the last working bell foundry in the UK.
Hello! I'm sorry I'm late. I managed to lose my car keys.
And after a few quick hellos, I was pointed straight into one of the buildings where they turn molten metal into bells that weigh tons.
Wow!
Just bells casually lying on the floor. Nope, completely wrong. Those are not bells, and I would find that out in a minute. Now, there are around 30 people working at the foundry. I met quite a few of them over the course of the day, but the folks I spent most time with were Anthony and Sam.
Samuel. Bonjour.
Anthony's the foreman. He's been working there for a while. And Sam?
You've been working here how long?
I've been here 6 years. Yeah. I started at 16. And when I first started, I couldn't lift, move or carry this. And now...
All right. Hang on. Okay. Right. Well, this is going to be embarrassing. Okay. I can at least lift
you
it.
You can...
I can do that. No, not out arms like... Can't do
See?
That.
He passed it to me because we were using it for a job. He just...
Yeah, I literally just walked by him, handed it to him, and it nearly just went flying.
I grabbed hold of it and was like, I'm going!
The plan for the day was to cast 4 bells, and I'm going to be there, generally demonstrating why I tend to work with a keyboard and not massive, heavy lumps of stuff that need workshop cranes to move them.
If you want to get involved at any point, that will not be a problem.
I'm not sure what the city boy can really add
can
to...
Can you swing a hammer? Have you ever swung a hammer?
I've done like half day of blacksmithing once.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, I'll be
all right.
When we have to smash the bells up, because that's graft.
All right.
So more.
Oh, we've got bells to smash up.
Yeah, we've got 4. Oh. No, 5.
Oh, I don't want to do it.
For anyone wondering on the camera, Sam is the age of a fetus.
Straight out of school, straight into it.
And he was lovely and he was polite. And he did as he was told, and now he's the most teenager I've ever met.
But I'm not a teenager anymore.
Well, you want to act like it sometimes.
No.
He's not going to get a Kevin the Teenager reference, is he?
No, he's not.
Sam cranked open the drying oven, and we started by sitting next to it with a cup of tea. The oven's not hot. It's not like a domestic oven. It's just warm enough to make sure that everything that's put inside dries out.
So anything bell-related has to be dried before we can even think about going near it with molten metal. These are the 4 bells that we're going to be casting today.
Oh, right. So I'm confused because those are already cast.
No, so this is these are the outer moulds. Hang on, yeah, let me move my chair as well. So that's just the outside mould surface.
This is what the finished bell will look like. So it's got all of its inscription. And what the customer's asked for, all the lettering.
Yeah.
And then this,
later on, will get lowered over the top of these cores. That's the inside shape.
Right.
So they'll marry up. And then the cavity in between this surface and that surface is the thickness of the bell.
Right. That's got to be so precise.
Well, we'll find out when we close them later. But
the outer casing of those moulds is metal. That's what I saw on the floor earlier. All the cases for different sizes and shapes and styles of bell. And those cases date back to the 1840s because they're big lumps of metal to keep the more delicate moulds inside safe. They don't need replacing. But packed into those cases are the actual moulds for the bells.
So the moulding material that we use to make bells is called loam. And it's effectively like a sticky mud.
That's loam. L-O-A-M. Some parts of the world pronounce it loam. But loam is basically sand, clay, bit of water, with some extra stuff we'll talk about in a moment.
So this material here is made of this.
All right.
We apply this to the steel case. So you can see how that's the steel case there.
Oh, you're right. It is warm in here. It's lovely.
And then we've got the loom here. Obviously, because this is wet, that's what we have to dry.
They make the bell moulds out of loom, press all the letters and designs into it, and then once it's dried, it's solid. I was worried about putting a fingerprint in the loom and distorting the bell, but no, Anthony can knock on it once it's dry.
Wait, that can't be made of loom.
Yeah, it's all... That is the same material as that.
Just dried out?
Yeah.
Has it got anything added to it?
It's got clay, goat's hair and horse manure.
And sure, okay.
Well, the horses know, because the horses can chew straw a lot finer than we can cut it.
I had to do some research to work out why they need that, and while I can't be certain, most of the sources I found say it's because when the bell's cast, organic materials burn when hit by the molten metal, and that creates tiny channels for gases to escape. If you didn't have them, steam would build up and the whole thing would explode. Someone, centuries ago, figured out that's a good way to stop your bells exploding. And the reason it all has to be dried first...
Any moisture in there is going to instantly expand when the molten metal hits it.
Oh, and you're going to get steam and bubbles.
In a closed cavity. Right. It's not just going to steam, it'll go bang.
Right, okay.
So everything has to be dried. So today, that is, as Sam has described it, perfect nap temperature.
That doesn't sound safe. That's the outer casing of the bell mould. But a bell is not a solid lump of metal, so you also need the core, the inside part of the bell mould. And at this point, Sam casually broke out the blowtorch.
Pre-warning, it's about to get warm.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
So I'm going to move out of the way.
Oh, okay, what?
Because this is a different mould material...
Right, the material?
Well, we call it air-set sand.
Right.
But it's temporary. So we have to explain all this in a minute.
That inner core is made of chemically bonded sand. They've got a small silo of sand in the corner of the foundry, along with two big barrels of resin and catalyst, and a mixing machine with various controls over it. What comes out initially feels just like slightly sticky sand. You can sculpt with it. But over time, the resin will harden it into a solid mass. And the settings on the controls let you choose how rigid or crumbly it gets, and whether it takes minutes or hours to get there. But because the core is made of that sand, it can't go in the oven.
So these all have to have an alcohol-based coating, which we then set fire to, which is what we just did. And that cures it.
Cures it, right.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the face of an idiot who is trying to understand the sequence of events here. Okay, so outer mould of the bell with the design pressed into it. That's made of loom inside a reusable Victorian-era steel case, which gets dried solid in the oven. Inner mould of bell, big solid lump of chemically bonded sand, covered in several coatings and cured with fire.
Different temperatures can damage moulds in different ways. Basically, because we let the moulds cool slowly, that puts added strain and pressure on the sand moulds, so they need an extra step of protection.
The final layer on those inner cores is a grey coat with graphite in it, and that's to let the final bell come out of the mould easily. Normally, if you're casting metal, you want it to cool quite fast, but for bells, it's got to be slow. Otherwise, the tone of the bell won't sound right.
So to cast a bell, you kind of have to go against all of the good principles of making a good casting.
Right.
So it's a constant...
Because otherwise it won't sound right?
Yeah, basically. It will just sound a bit sharp. Which is a big thing.
Right.
I don't bell ring or anything like that, and I'm not very musically gifted.
I can play the triangle.
I think sharp there is referring not to the pitch of the bell, but to the quality of the sound, whether it's resonant and sounds like you're ringing a bell, not just hitting a lump of metal with a hammer. That, I was expecting that to go clunk. That did not go, that actually sounds really nice.
We won't know if this mould's been any good, considering we made it. You know, this is 2 weeks' worth of work.
Oh, yeah. And you use it once.
Yep. And it'll all boil down to 20 minutes. Once the metal's in, sort of give it 20 minutes to solidify, and then that's it. That's 2 weeks' worth of work, and we've just got to see and hope that it was done right.
What's it like the first time doing that? I imagine it's more fresh in your memory.
I get really nervous.
He gets nervous about things. I'm the more chill one.
Yeah, he's the most Gen Z person other than that. He just does not care.
I don't stress about anything. Nothing's worth stressing about.
It is. It frustrates me how, like, he's not, that's to say he's not complacent or anything like that.
Oh.
He's just got a much better, like, mindset about it. But I'll still get a bit twitchy and a bit nervous, like, every time. And it's not a bad thing either. You know, it's a dangerous job. You know,
it's a dangerous job, he says, casually putting the fire out. The techniques have changed a bit over time. Chemically bonded sand and compressed air hoses are obviously modern inventions. But if you put a 15th century bell founder in that workshop, I think they'd recognise most of the processes. And the metal would be much the same, about a 4-to-1 ratio of copper to tin.
It's not quite medieval still, but it's about as medieval as a modern job gets.
First of all, let's go and turn the fire alarm off.
Oh, because there's going to be a fire.
But why would, in a building designed to burn things, why would you put fire alarm in?
Bearing in mind, if we can't put it out and we're running, just run too.
We can't put it out, run away.
Cases have been dried, cores have been coated. Those will get put together in a bit, but next, they need to get the furnace going.
See, inside here is a like a ceramic pot. You can just see the lip of it here. When we get it going, the fire will create like a cyclone around that pot and heat it up. And that's how we... So when this gets red hot, that's how we'll melt the metal. If that leaks for whatever reason, the metal has to be able... Its full contents has to be able to go somewhere. So under these two plates, you can just sort of see down here is a massive trough.
Yeah.
That's just... We have to keep empty at all times so that if this starts to leak, we can drain it straight into this trough.
Which is going to give people a very bad day cleaning up afterwards, but it safely gets the metal out of the way.
But that bad day of cleaning is infinitely better than
the other, molten metal spilling on the floor of this.
Yeah, than the other consequences, absolutely. Oh, but then as an added safety feature, this whole floor is a giant sandpit. These are just steel plates put on the floor for us to walk on. But underneath this is just sand.
It's a diesel-powered furnace, a colossal thing that takes hours to heat up to the temperature it needs.
Because it's not warmed up yet, you can feel a little bit of heat there. So you can feel that vortex.
Oh, whoa!
Yeah,
you can.
A little bit of heat coming from there. And then if you look under there...
Oh, blimey, all right.
You can see the flame inside there. Now you can see the flame starting to circle up. Right, now we're on the clock. It's all countdown now. We've got to get these ready before that's ready.
I'm just staying out of your way.
Their next job is to stick together the outer moulds and the inner moulds. The first three went without a hitch.
Perfect.
Like a glove. Oh, and it's just...
I'm down.
Straight down. Yeah.
Oh, I'm down.
Down that side.
Yeah, boy.
They put some sealant on the bottom of each case as well, just to make sure everything was locked in, and then they clamped them together. They tried the fourth one. It didn't quite match up. It needs a bit of sanding first, and then they were good to go.
Sorry, so I had a bit of a brain fart. Then I had to try and remember what buttons press.
They're all labelled and marked.
I know. Oh, I look at you. Learn to drive the forklift.
No, it's the big cheese. If I was cheese, I'd definitely be the big cheese.
Really big cheese.
In fact, I'd be such a big cheese, I'd almost be a cow.
That's a good point. If you were cheese, what cheese would you be?
Just sound really boring. Like,
you'd be cheddar.
I'd be red Leicester. I love red Leicester cheese. Cheddar is definitely the close second. What would you be?
I feel like I'd be Brie. Maybe a nice camembert.
Just a melt.
I'm a melt. Thanks, mate. Oh, and it just goes straight down. Done. It didn't. See, you know what I mean by like, three of them, not a problem. Happy to be closed. Let's crack on.
20 minutes.
This one, nah, don't want to be a bell today. Not feeling it.
Anthony and Sam had a very difficult question for me.
If you were a cheese, what cheese would you be?
See, the question is not what cheese do you like?
No, it's what if you were a cheese, you woke up tomorrow, oh no, I'm a cheese. What cheese do you want to be?
The best answer I've got is like that American plastic cheese.
Fair.
Like, it's all a bit superficial, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really doing any hard work.
Yeah, it's spray cheese.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not going that far.
Holding my second camera there is May, who handles all the foundry's social media. Because, yes, John Taylor's is the last working British bell foundry, but they also have some other lines of work. Installing the bells, advising on bells and bell towers, and there's also the Bell Foundry Trust, which is a small museum and heritage attraction doing tours, and they have outreach to do. There's not the demand for bells that there once was. The bells they're casting today are for a church down in Cornwall, and the raw material is that church's old bells, which were cast in 1883 by that exact foundry. There's nothing wrong with the metal itself, it's just that after more than 140 years of summer heat and winter cold while being repeatedly hit with hammers, I mean, frankly, I wouldn't sound good after that. The bells, well, they don't sound so good either. But you can't fit a whole bell inside a furnace, so they need smashing into pieces. At this point, I need to give you, the YouTube viewer of this series, a warning. This new format that I'm working with will have mid-roll host-read adverts in it, like basically every other long-form video on the platform, because, well, this
this ain't cheap. But if you'd like to see all these videos 1 week earlier without any of those adverts, and for one of them, without the extensive blurring that's going to be needed, you can watch over on Nebula. There's a link in the description and more about that at the end of the show.
Ta-da! These were made in this building 1883 was. They've come home to where they were made. They were made up there on those tables with the same kit.
And they will become four new belts.
And yeah.
All right.
How cool is
that? That means that someone's got to hit him with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, now. I mean, is there some graph to do now?
I set up a couple of cameras, but before we started, Anthony did show me that the lettering on the new bells won't just be similar, it's made with the exact same metal stamps.
These?
Yeah.
Are the original stamps.
Oh!
There you go. They're the same. They're the same stamps.
And so they swung the sledgehammer and started to smash up the bells with very little ceremony.
He's only gone first so that now next person that hits it and it breaks apart, he did all the graph.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someone else, let's go.
That's okay.
Sorry.
That's what it's there for. I'll get the GoPro out of range. We're fine. They've offered to let me swing the hammer. This is my gesture. This is my very little gesture of swinging a hammer. And this is going to be embarrassing. How long did it take you to be able to swing the hammer properly?
Oh, maybe a year.
Right.
That was my first question. Have you ever swung a sledgehammer?
Yes. Not that often, many years ago.
Well, I'll just give you, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, but all your weight is obviously at one end. For swinging, you can bring up. Obviously, the momentum will take it up.
Yeah.
And then as you come down, slide your hand down and follow through with, like, your whole core.
Right.
Because we've seen people try and go like...
Oh, yeah, no, this is not like...
And that's how you break a back, pull out a shoulder.
Yeah.
All kinds. And you want to be aiming for just sort of anywhere there.
This is
difficult.
Yeah,
no. Not bad for a first attempt. Oh, hey!
It's going!
That's cracked it!
It's going!
That's cracked it! Hey!
That was a change in tone.
I mean, I do feel a bit guilty cracking a belt in 1883.
Everyone always does.
That's me
tapping out. Are
you sure? I'm sure. I'd love to say I can do it, but...
You cracked it.
You did?
I cracked it.
Yeah.
I didn't... Yeah, I didn't do that.
That's a tough bell. That is a very tough bell.
I was waiting for you to just, like, bing and it blow apart. I mean, didn't I? I was like, oh, okay, maybe we've actually given him, like, the hardest
one. It is a very tough bell.
You okay?
Yeah, it's just hard work.
While they smashed up the rest of the bells, May gave me a tour around the workshops because they've got a huge space where they make the frames for the bells and a load of other stuff besides, and where they do the tuning, which is a process that involves steadily and carefully shaving down the cast bells until they're exactly on pitch. And the offcuts, the swarth from that bell tuning, that goes back over to be raw material for new bells.
Calm down. Calm down. Before we put big chunks in the furnace, we recycle all the bell tipping, so like the offshoots from tuning.
Right.
So we weigh out a load of them, put them in the furnace first, because then they'd make like a soft base for us to drop all the sharp pointy metal onto. That alone's probably 15 kilos. Any bigger than that.
It's heavy work.
You don't need the gym.
I feel actively guilty just standing here with the camera, but I'm well aware that health and safety, for very good reason, will not let me get my hands near that furnace.
How good's your aim? Hold that.
There you go.
I asked Josh. He said it'd be mozzarella.
What? The furnace started belching out green fire, burning off a load of impurities, slowly heating up and then melting the metal.
This is only just over half. When we've smashed up that bell and put all this in, that's about half. We've still got another about 5-600 kilos to go.
Remember earlier that they said the floor is just one giant sandpit and that the bells have to cool slowly as possible to get the structure and the sound right? Well, the best way to insulate those bells and stop them cooling too fast is to dig them into the sandpit.
That's the bottom bit that had the core on. Yeah. And this is the top bit that you saw us lowering down over the core. Yeah. And now they are met in the middle. So inside here, there is a cavity that will run the entire length up to the top of the bell, where once this pit's been dug, we'll lower it in, and then we will put a box on top, and that's where we pour into, and then it'll flow and fill the whole cavity.
You're seeing a montage here. This took an hour, even with the excavator.
It's so nice that you do all these bits now.
Well, it was going to happen eventually.
No, I know, but I spent so many years having to do it myself. Oh, it was such hard work.
And that's where the molten metal will go.
Yep, that's the pouring bush.
That pouring bush is made with the same chemically bonded sand as the inner core of the bell. It sets in just a few minutes, and then it has to be protected with the same graphite layer on top, which means they also need to get cured.
Jeez,
that's hot.
Right.
So you see how like smoky it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, that means it's more than hot enough. So when it melts, it creates like a crust on top. You have to break through that crust. Go through my pre-flight checks. Make sure we've got everything we need.
Just final weight now, and then we're all good to go.
We were joined by half a dozen folks over from the workshop who were ready for their part in a well-practiced routine. I was given a heat-resistant suit along with gloves, helmet and face guard. We were joined up on the balcony by visitors on a tour, including folks from the church whose bells they were recasting.
Anthony, I'm just going to check with you one more time. My job is stay behind you.
Yeah, so just stay with me.
All right.
And you're all good. Everybody where they need to be? Going to assume yes. Cool. Let's crack on.
They don't pour directly from the furnace into the bell casings, because then they'd have to somehow move the whole furnace. Instead, the glowing molten metal at around 1,200 Celsius goes into a smaller pouring ladle.
Are you nervous?
Yes.
I'm always nervous.
This was metal pouring like water. Your brain thinks it's water and thinks it's got the properties and weight of water. And I know it sounds obvious to say it out loud, but that has the weight and inertia of metal because it is metal.
Wait, where's Tom? Did he wipe that?
He's behind
here. If at any point you feel like you're going to get showered,
yep.
Tuck your shoulders in.
Tuck your shoulders in, okay.
Yeah, protect your neck.
Got it.
It should be fine, but
yep.
They're little tricks that you pick up over time.
Yeah.
That's currently hotter than a volcano.
Okay.
Every day for you. Well, good news. My camera is working. That's good.
That'll do you, Bill.
Because we don't get a second take at that.
The metal is giving off its own light. It's illuminating the space around it and our faces. The cameras can't quite deal with it, but there's detail in the surface, little imperfections that aren't glowing as much.
It looks like a crumble. So now we're going to pick it up,
yep.
Spin it round, and then I'm going to take all the impurities off the top.
This is quite a lot.
Then we'll put it down, we'll put the lid on, and then we'll go down and, well, we'll have a look, sort of gauge it by eye what the temperature's looking like, which I think is going to be really hot.
They used the overhead crane to move the pot of extremely dangerous molten metal across to the moulds.
You can put it down, we'll leave it for a minute because that is way too hot.
So it's too hot right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
All it'd do is we'd pour it in and it would just absolutely obliterate the mould surface.
Right.
So it would cast the bell, but all the finish would just be horrendous.
Right.
So, but then too cold, you just go bang.
Yeah.
And you just get a slab.
Anthony wasn't using a thermometer or an infrared camera there. He was looking at the pot and from experience and knowledge just going, that's too hot. That knowledge was passed down to him by the people who trained him, and he's passing it on to Sam, and so the chain goes on for centuries.
But see how it's like smoking out of every...
Yeah.
And that, yeah, shouldn't be normally doing that.
Okay. So we got to wait for it to cool a little.
Excellent. Told you this bit's chill. Yeah, Bill, if you woke up tomorrow and you were cheese, what cheese would you be?
Oh, Stilton, mate.
So when everybody sees us on the balcony and they think we're being really serious and professional, yeah, this is what we're asking when the visors are down and no one can hear us.
And there's quite a few spectators up there as well. Hello.
So you see how now, look, it's all sort of calming down.
I mean, I hope so. I don't know what's showing up on camera because it's so brilliant compared to everything else around.
I reckon we're good for the first one.
All right. Here's the crucial moment. Weeks of work and hard graft led up to this. One person, Josh, he was controlling the position of the bucket on the crane. Sam was controlling the pour. He's rotating the pot to keep the flow of molten metal steady.
Keep going, Sam. Keep going, Sam. Keep going, Sam. Keep going, Sam. You're in the lip.
You ready?
Yeah, ready when you want, mate. Nice and steady.
And Anthony was controlling the flow, watching when it's nearly full and providing just a bit of movement in the top to make sure everything's flowing nicely and it's a constant stream.
I don't know if it's showing up on camera, but there's a skin of slightly cooled metal on top and then just liquid pouring out underneath
it. We did pour a core in this one, didn't we?
Well, yeah.
Oh, got it. There we go. Fill
the
bush.
And then they moved on to the next bell. They started with the smallest and they're working up.
Nice and steady, Josh.
Yep.
Good lad. You ready?
Yep.
Here we go. These are a bit bigger. This one's a bit bigger, so...
Only 2 inches.
Huh?
Only 2 inches.
Makes all the difference, mate. Don't let anybody tell you it doesn't. Ooh, got it. I believe. Yep, got it. Oh, look at that. Didn't even spill any.
Two bells down, two to go. They dumped a few handfuls of sand on the top of each one once it's poured as insulation. I'll explain what the folks behind were doing in a minute.
Yeah, ready when you are, Sam.
Yeah.
Nice and steady.
You're jostling it through and making sure it doesn't stick.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. I'm controlling the flow so that it's a constant stream going in. Got it.
Right, with all those done, one final bell, the big one.
Are you a bit warm?
Yep. Right, last one. Here we go. Nice and steady, Sam.
Yeah.
Ready when you are.
Beautiful.
There was an air of quiet concentration over the whole group now. Everything seemed to be going okay. Sam was pouring the metal at exactly the right speed. The level in the pouring bush was staying exactly where it should be, with the inflow matching the outflow. But as we got near to the end of the last bell, Anthony realised something.
Oh, there is a lot left.
There's a lot left.
There's a lot left.
The team had worked out the mass of the bells that they were putting in and the mass of the bells that would be coming out, but it could only be an estimate. And there was too much molten metal remaining. The bell mould was about to be full, and they can't let the remaining metal cool in the ladle because they'd never get it out again.
Right, Tom, I need you to go that side, please, mate. Mate, I need you to follow him.
As soon as the last bell was poured, Sam cut off the flow and then very, very quickly got to digging.
Oh, my goodness.
And as fast as he can dig, with a 1,000-plus Celsius pot of molten metal next to him, that hole was getting filled up.
So that's just the excess.
Yeah,
that's just
so we'll repurpose that.
Right. So that'll get recycled again and again.
Yeah.
Once that's cooled, they can use the crane and forklift to pull out the ingots of metal, break them up and use them again. But it does mean there was some very heavy and unexpected work for Sam.
It's warm back here.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm all right here.
Shut up.
Go on, Sam. You're nearly there, kid. I'm so proud of you.
You okay, Sam?
Yeah, it was just a bit warm.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Which means there's one last thing to explain, and which I got to have a go at. What are they doing poking sticks into the molten metal?
So if you take the bar above my hand,
yeah,
don't put any resistance.
Yeah.
Right, hang on, don't put any resistance. Feel that.
Yes.
That's the top of the core.
Okay.
It is imperative we do not hit that. Because remember, there's a hole straight through the middle.
Yes.
If we hit through that, all that vanishes.
This is feeding the bell, agitating the top of it just a little to make sure there's no air bubbles, no weird inconsistencies. It's all just solid metal.
Okay. I'm going to let go of the bar. It's yours. See how it's like kind of spongy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's metal structure starting to
build. Right. And actually, I can see what was completely liquid is now just slightly sticking to it.
So now just big circles and you're up and down and you can gently touch that mushy bit.
I am not going to gently touch that mushy bit. I'm not going to risk...
Worse than you never thought you'd hear today.
All right. I'm going to give that back to you. Thank you so much for letting me try that. I'm just... Whoa.
As soon as these are all fed, that's it. Day's done.
Folks, I hate to be the master of ceremonies here, but I think they deserve a round of applause for that.
Well, absolutely not.
Oh, look at that. So which ones are the new ones? And which ones are the refitted ones?
So the new ones are this one?
Yep.
That one, and the one over there. Which are 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Wow. And if you're wondering about the numbers that are being called out, that's a future video on my road trip across England. If you want to see episode 2 right now, you can on Nebula. You'll get all the episodes of this series a week before they're on YouTube, plus exclusive Nebula originals, like the new Anatomy of series from Real Engineering, which starts with a deep dive into the iconic and seemingly indestructible Nokia 3310 using a CT scanner. Or there's season 2 of comedy presentation show Abolish Everything. Right now, annual subscriptions are 50% off, just $30 a year, which works out to only $2.50 a month. Scan the code on screen or follow the link in the description, and you'll also help support this channel and the England series. As for what the next episode is, well, next time, or right now on Nebula, I hunt for invisible chimneys in the sky and make this noise.